Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Sheila Markle, who is the Executive Director of Family and Children's Services for Guelph and Wellington County. We say it all the time, but the COVID-19 pandemic has affected all areas of our society, including our social services. Those offices had to close down earlier this year as part of the global lockdown, but the difficult and complex work continued as social workers and their staff did the jobs they usually do from home and out in the community while trying to navigate the ever-changing health picture and public health standards. Working with children is always difficult, even at the best of times, but how has Family and Children's Services been coping with the added anxiety of COVID-19 and the public health crisis on their usual workload? The state of social work in Guelph is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. So why focus on Family and Children's Services for an episode of the podcast? Well, let's go back to the end of August and a gathering in Riverside Park. The people there said point blank that they did not identify with the QAnon mythology, but they knew all the buzzwords and slogans, including Save the Children. There's a real-life nonprofit that's been around for over 100 years called Save the Children, and they have loudly expressed concerns about how their cause has been co-opted by conspiracy theorists. And then one of the counter-protesters at Riverside Park said something interesting to me. She said, "Why don't these people, if they are so concerned about child welfare, volunteer with a local organization that does just that?" Well, in Guelph and Wellington County, social assistance for children and families is provided by Family and Children's Services, but you may still know them by their old name, the Children Aid Society. The name change was meant to flush away that old image of the childcare worker forcibly taking a kid from his or her home after just one negative report about the parents. It's the type of scene that launched so many segments of lost love and reunions from the old Unsolved Mysteries show. The truth is, now, 99% of children that are under FCS care remain at home with their families, and it is only under extreme circumstances where there is no family member, relative, or other type of personal connection that a child ends up in care. FCS offers clinical support, parenting groups, foster parents, and adoption opportunities, which is work that has all been made more complicated with mask wearing, physical distancing, and all the other things we've had to adopt in the COVID era. So how is Family and Children's Services coping? So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we will dig into the work of Family and Children's Services with Executive Director Sheila Markle, and we'll talk about the work that she and her staff do, how that work has changed over the years, and where things currently stand in terms of the demand and requests for assistance. We will also talk in depth about what working at FCS looks like every day, the good outcomes they see all the time, and how parents will even seek them out if they need assistance, as opposed to that old stereotypical image of people reporting bad parents who live next door. And of course, we will also discuss the effects of COVID-19 on the work of FCS, what kind of help they're looking for from the general public right now, and what kind of help their clients need to get through these difficult times. So I caught up with Sheila Markle just a couple of weeks ago from her office here in Guelph via Zoom. So Sheila Markle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to join you.
Let's just start just generally talking about your work at Family and Children's Services, Guelph Wellington. Just off the top of your head, what does your organization do?
Well, our organization exists to support children, youth, and families in all aspects of, you know, their lives. So if families are struggling, or if they need support, or they need resources or assistance to help them care for their kids, that's the bulk of what we do. Some people know us as we are a child welfare organization. So we do also, we're responsible for the protection and safety of children. So if there are issues, that are related to the protection and safety of kids, it's our organization that needs to respond. And so in, you know, very few cases, children may need to come into the care of the organization in order to be safe. But that is a very small part of what we do, and it's probably one of the biggest stereotypes or misnomers about the work that we do. each year for the last several years, as we've been keeping stats, only about 1 to 1.5% of the children we work with in a given year ever need to leave their parents' care and come into the care of the organization. And if you were to ask people, they would probably say that that's the bulk of what we do. And in fact, it's a very small percentage. So for the last several years, we average serving about 3,500 children a year. Mm-hmm. And of that, anywhere from 1 to 1.5% actually come into our care. Our business really is to support children, youth, and families so that, you know, they're any problems getting in the way are addressed and families can be better off and happy, healthy, and together.
So to put that in context or into like hard numbers, you can probably count the number of kids on one hand you have to physically remove from their home in any given, or maybe even two hands. I'm so bad at math, but basically that's the gist.
It probably is somewhere between 35 and 50 children a year. Mm-hmm. But many of those kids, they might be removed temporarily or they might need to leave their families temporarily. But they often return, and often, you know, our biggest, desire is for children. If a parent, you know, is in a situation where they need, you know, someone else to temporarily care for their child, often it's someone in their family system or their community, their neighborhood, friends and family that will provide that temporary care. Mm-hmm. And only when that's not possible because there isn't anyone who can assist, then we would look at a foster family to provide that care.
Right. It's not very cut and dry, is it? I think you were getting at something, this image of child services, child welfare people, you know, sort of carrying children out of the home for their own protection, despite whatever objections that a parent mm-hmm. might have, that this is kind of a one thing or another. You're either a perfect parent that child services would never come down on, or you are so terrible or mistaken as so terrible that some mean old lady from child services has to take your kids away.
Right. And, you know, the media doesn't help with those stereotypes because, you know, you only need to turn on the TV or watch a movie where there's the stereotypical child welfare professional who, you know, when I watch movies like that, I think that is not the way that it happens in real life. And not to say that those things never happen, but certainly, you know, we work very hard at trying to do our work with the utmost of care and compassion. When people find out where I work, and I'm sure that it's the case for many child welfare professionals, I often get the, oh my goodness, that must be such a difficult job. But the reality is that we have far more good stories to tell than, you know, really, really complex and difficult and sad ones, you know? Mm.
I do kind of want to lift off of that then, because obviously going into this, I was thinking about, you know, because it is on your website, right, that it's 98.6% of the time the clients you deal with stay at home with their parents. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that made me curious about the circumstances of what constitutes the 1.4%. But since you phrased it the way you did, when you talk about the positive things or the positive cases with the children you work with and those positive results, what kind of comes to mind? Anything specific you could share? Maybe, of course, without sharing names or anything, but, mm-hmm. You know, what are some of these good outcomes?
Oftentimes, you know, parents, you know, life brings struggles to all families, right? Mm-hmm. And so it could be that, you know, someone in the family is struggling with some, you know, issues where they need support. So it could be, there could be some mental health issues. There could be addiction issues. There could be just general parenting approaches that folks need help with. It could be that children need services and supports and parents don't know where to get those. So often we're a connector, you know, we sort of assess what is the need, what's getting in the way, and we certainly use a lot of our community partners to provide services and supports. One of the things that we do is that we often delve into how people were parented themselves, because we learn our parenting strategies from the ways we were parented. And sometimes people don't recognize that those might need shifting. And so really sometimes it's just conversations about, well, how did you learn to be a parent and what are the things that are getting in the way? Or in some cases, you know, helping them sort of look at how they're interacting with their child and how that might be exactly like creating problems and you know, how their child might need something, a different response. So, you know, there's a lot of, every family's different and it really requires us getting to know, you know, a family, getting to know the children, getting to know the parents and understanding what their needs are so that we can address those needs individually and not just, you know, send people off to programs. Because, I mean, I think historically that was a strategy used across social services, right? Create lots and lots of programs. And I think we recognize that people are individuals and that they all need slightly different things. So we need to individualize our approaches in a much broader way than we did historically.
Do the families you help seek you out? Because, I mean, this kind of goes into some of those preconceived notions about this of, you know, people looking at the family down the road and thinking they may or be inappropriate parents or that there's something wrong, there may be some issue. Like, I guess it's that kind of snitch line mentality about people calling social services, right? But, you know, do the families themselves seek out your assistance? And I mean, I imagine that especially hard for them too, to seek out, as it is for anybody, to say, I need help. But is that something you've encountered?
Absolutely. And I think our annual reports show the referral source. So people that call us about a child or asking for help, parents are often in the top three or top five of the referral sources. So often it's 20 to maybe 35% of the calls we get are from parents themselves asking for support. And at times it's higher than that. And we really encourage that, you know, we really encourage parents to call us and say, you know, I'm really struggling with, you know, whatever the issue is. Where can I get some support or help for this? Sometimes it's us, sometimes it's a community partner. And we, you know, connect people with the appropriate resources or talk them. Sometimes it's just a phone call and we give them advice on the phone and, you know, they give it a try and, you know, call us back if they need to, but, you know, they may not, they may have, you know, gotten what they needed just by picking up the phone. So we really encourage people to call themselves if they're having issues or problems.
I'm curious what you have, your years doing this work, you know, looking at the sort of the broader, not that we're trying to solve society in one podcast, but, you know, have you reached any sort of conclusions yourself about, you know, the common threads, the common questions you get asked, the common issues you deal with? I mean, what does that sort of tell you about how we understand, you know, parenting and child rearing in you know, these days? You know, what are we kind of universally doing wrong in terms of our you know, expectations on parents?
Well, that's a big question.
It is a big question.
We could go in a lot of different areas, but I would say that in many respects, child welfare is a, you know, the work in child welfare is a reflection of our society and the social policies that exist to support people. So, you know, when families are stressed, whether it's to do with, you know, unemployment, poverty, lack of housing, mental health issues that where services aren't available, addiction support, all of those domestic violence, like all of those problems contribute to parents' capacity to cope. And there's those are just examples. And so when daycare, for example, is accessible, or when good housing is accessible, like it reduces the stress levels in families. Mm-hmm. So when those things are a problem, then we tend to see more families needing support. And a lot of our work, and not just with individuals, but provincially and with our community partners, and just in our community, is advocacy. Like, we see ourselves as an organization that really has a responsibility to advocate for the things that are getting in the way of families being able to be healthy and well, if a lot of those other things are getting in the way.
Right. It's another example of how nothing, none of the issues, none of the challenges in society are necessarily siloed, that if there's good daycare options, there's affordable daycare options, there's good housing options, good jobs available, it's those sort of broader societal things, it sort of makes your job at Child Services easier.
Yeah, everything's connected, even down to transportation support, or, if you can't get a family doctor, or you can't access, health services because of where you live, or, it's all connected. And it's when those connections aren't working that, we see families struggle more. Sometimes it's a direct result of, historical issues, but most times it's a little bit more complex than that, and it requires us to really understand, like, step back from. You can't just look at the individual and in the family and or the parent, the children, and see a problem and on its surface have a solution. You have to understand where the problem's originating, and that really, I think, is our work, to try to really help understand what's causing the problem and try to remove the barriers so that we can help a family and they can, achieve the result that they're needing, and then move on and then not need us. Like, that is, ultimately the goal for us is to assist families so that they don't need us in the future. But if they do, then that's great too. But, we don't want to foster reliance on our services, by not helping, get the problem out of the way.
You're right, but that's such an interesting way of putting it, because there are a lot of people still to this day who think of services like yours, or, employment insurance. They think of these as crutches. They think of these as things that are designed for people to rely on. And that's not the case. The idea is that we're going to help you solve problems so you are not reliant on us.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the ultimate goal, right? Because if people continue to need us, it means the problems that are in the way aren't getting solved,
And from what I understand too, just what you're saying is that people may not understand what the problem is. Mm-hmm. That it's, it could be something as simple as, parents frustrated with behavior of a child that could be tied to an issue that has not been diagnosed, and because of accessibility or because schools are, just as an example, so busy making sure no one gets COVID-19 that learning disabilities or things like that are missed.
Yeah. Or it could be that the problem is not the child. The problem could be the way a parent is responding to a child's behavior. It might be encouraging the problem as opposed to eliminating it. Like, it could be any of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did open the door because I did want to address this directly about how COVID-19 has sort of affected your delivery models and the services you offer. How has having to deal with the pandemic sort of changed your day-to-day routines?
Mm-hmm. Well, initially when COVID happened, like everyone else, we immediately moved to everything, you know, most of our staff working from home, although we never closed our office. We maintained our offices, our office in Guelph open because we wanted to be accessible to people who might not have, you know, cell phones or electronic devices to access us. So, but for the most part in the early days, most of our staff were working virtually. But we quickly pivoted from that because we're an essential service, and we're a service that's responsible for the safety of children. Just like, you know, other essential services, you know, if you need a doctor, you have to be able to go to the doctor, or you have to be able to get health services. So we fall into that category. And it was clear that we needed to do work. We needed to be out visiting clients. So pretty much since the beginning, we had been assessing who needed to be seen in person and who we could work with virtually. And over the last, probably by June, we were back to providing most of the service in person. And, you know, obviously folks still do some virtual work. There are some folks that really, really like that. There are some clients, some families that we work with who really like being able to have those long chats over the phone or virtually. But, you know, when our staff are out in the community, they're, of course, using appropriate social distancing and frequent hand washing, and they use masks, and, you know, they use all of the things that we've now, I think, as a society, come to realize are the things that keep us safe. And that seems to be working. And I think at a time when a lot of services weren't doing in-person service, I think it was helpful that we were able to do that. We were delivering groceries and you know, trying to make sure people had what they needed. And like lots of other services, you know, starting to turn our minds to how can we do things a little differently. But, you know, at the end of the day, we still have a job to do, and we have to make sure that we see families and that we assess situations so that, you know, kids are safe and families are getting the support that they need.
Aside from just the complications of how you deal with people in person, face-to-face, and, you know, wearing masks and keeping your 2 meters apart and all that thing, has COVID created any additional pressures for you? I mean, in terms of like the issues families are dealing with that they may need to seek out your help or guidance?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's been a really stressful time for parents, particularly with kids not in school and most, you know, lots of summer programming not happening. So a lot of focus and attention has been on making sure kids have things to do, supporting families with ideas about how to keep their kids busy, supporting, you know, providing ideas around activities or actual, you know, materials or things, and other organizations are doing that as well. You know, I think that, you know, it's been a really, really stressful time, and, you know, we're trying to be very attuned to that and making sure that, you know, folks need support. I mean, one of our biggest concerns is since COVID, with things just being so different, that people may not be reaching out as much as they might have before. And so I have been doing, you know, I've done a bit of messaging and videos out and tried to get that out to say, please call us. We're still here. We're still open. If you need support, please don't hesitate to call. And if it's not us that can support you, or that, you know, and somebody else is better suited, we'll make sure you get connected to the organization or the supports that you need. So, you know, and I think that's across the province, that volumes have been a little bit down at the front door. Mm. So, you know, but that's to be expected. Kids aren't in school. people aren't out and about as much. And so we've been a little bit worried about, social isolation. That if people don't have things to do or places to go or the resources to get out, then, that's tough. And it's tough on kids. It's tough on parents when you're at home all the time.
Have you seen a change in the number of, just calls or inquiries you've received? Because I know that was one of the things that was talked about fairly early on, that if you're locked down and it's a domestic abuse situation, then there's, real concern there that you can't get away from your abuser, whoever it is. If you're, locked down in a house with them, have you seen any reflection of that in your own statistics?
Yeah, we've seen fewer calls coming in to make referrals. In the rest of the organization, the volume has remained the same. So, we sort of have a front door where people can call and make inquiries or report kids they're worried about or ask for help, families calling themselves. So that's, I call that the front door. It's at the front door that we're seeing the volume of calls being less than they were before COVID. In the rest of the organization, in terms of ongoing families that we support, like families that we have open to provide support to, those numbers haven't changed that much. And in terms of the children that we serve in care, those numbers haven't changed that much. So, and I think provincially, as I said, I think that is the trend, that with kids out of school and, because other service partners are often folks that call. So police, teachers, daycare providers, community partners, as they're seeing children. So with kids not as visible in the community, those folks aren't calling to the same extent that they were before COVID. I suspect that will start to change a little bit with kids back in school and services resuming somewhat. So I'm sure that post-COVID we'll find out, lots of things about, what was happening during COVID. But for the most part, we're supporting the families that we always have, and we're, certainly doing our best at the front door to take calls and make sure that people get what they need.
Are you concerned about what you might find out of post-COVID, that, all the times people weren't able to knock on your front door, as you say, that, what was going on while everyone was locked up I'm not sure how to phrase it, but
I think as a society, and not just with child welfare clients, but I would say with anybody that's got children, any families, I think when we look back on this time, like socialization and being around others and kids being with their friends and being able to play and go to their sports activities and, all of those things is extremely important for children's development. And I think when we look back and realize that there was this big chunk of time where kids didn't have that happening for them, and in some cases at really pivotal points in their development, and the reliance on devices to sort of for kids to be on doing online schooling and probably amusing themselves online, I wonder, I'm not an expert in by any sense of the imagination, but I wonder how what we'll be talking about a couple of years from now when things are more back to normal. And I know more recently things have been resuming as they can. But, it's just, development is socialization is key to kids' development. And it's why a lot of the, American Pediatric and the Canadian Pediatric Associations have really supported kids going back to school, even though there's, even with a COVID risk, because the risk of COVID in children is less than the risk of them not, being with peers and interacting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more risk than just catching COVID for young people, even though the data has sort of shown that they are not as susceptible to the effects of the virus as adults are.
Right. And that's not to minimize the concern that people have with children like transmitting COVID, although I think there is some research to suggest that young children have, less likelihood of transmitting it as well as getting it. I'm talking very young children, but I mean, that data is like 6 months, you know, in the making. It's, you know, I think all data is it's early days. It's, you know, I don't know that we know as much about this disease as the ideal for us to really know exactly what to do. So I think we're all kind of feeling our way through this, but, you know, and learning as we go. But I would say, you know, from our perspective in terms of how COVID has impacted our organization, you know, it is really difficult to support families when so many of the things that they need are affected also by the COVID shutdown, you know. So whether it's other services, whether it's other supports, it's seeing your physician in person or, you know, like there's so many things that families rely on that are not operating normally right now. So that's been challenging, you know, to support families when the world isn't back to normal yet, you know?
I want to focus maybe on ways people can help out because I think people are hyper aware that, you know, different nonprofits, different government agencies are always looking for some kind of volunteer assistance or monetary assistance. So, you know, what kind of help are you looking for from the general public these days? How can people get involved?
Well, I think there's a few things that folks can do. You know, our organization is always looking for volunteers to help with driving, volunteers to help with maybe tutoring, especially in, you know, for kids who may be doing school from home, you know. There's always volunteer opportunities at our organization. And, you know, we're also, you know, one of the big things that we do is that we support youth who are not living at home with their families. And some of those youth that, I don't know if you're aware, but the age of protection changed from 16 to 18 a few years back. So we support, you know, adolescence can be a really tough time for some kids. And so as a result, there are some kids that are trying to make it on their own and trying to, you know, transition to adulthood. And so our organization supports a number of youth in that regard. And we really work hard to bring in dollars to support kids to, you know, live on their own, to get off to post-secondary, to, you know, just meet the needs of you know, what they need to try to figure out how they're going to launch into adulthood when they may not have family to support them. So we often get donations for education or donations to help get kids set up in on their own, purchase things that will set them up for a career or you know, a school program. So, you know, we're always open to taking gifts and donations in that regard. We're also really try to support families to maybe engage in activities that they would like to with their kids, but they don't have the money. So we have a fund that allows us to be able to support or sponsor families to do activities, whether it's go for a canoe ride on the Speed River because you have to rent canoes, or whether it's to attend, you know, a sporting event, although that's not quite happening right now, but or a movie or school trips or things that, you know, many families can't afford to offer to their children. So, so people can help in that way. you know, call us if you're interested in getting involved. We have special friends who like a big brother, big sister. So you can support a parent if you have the capacity to maybe sort of mentor a parent because you've got those skills yourselves, or if you would like to become a special friend to a child and do activities with them on a regular basis, maybe take them out, you know, spend some time with them to give their parents a bit of respite, those sorts of things.
I always hear how Guelph is a caring community, so I am hopeful that some people may take you up on the offer.
It is a caring community for sure.
Well, Sheila Markle, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for everything you and everyone at the Family and Children's Services do every day. We really appreciate it, and thanks so much for sharing all that information with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam.
And once again, that was Sheila Markle. To find out more about the work of Family and Children's Services of Guelph and Wellington County, or to learn how you can get involved, or what kind of volunteer assistance they need, you can just visit their website at fcsgw.org. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can download it from Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. When you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, wherever you get it, you will also get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can find Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you would like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.